Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are. This is Eric, he's the oldest one. The producer who makes it fun, gotta give him the credit. He's good with the edits. He's been the driving force since they begun. Next we got brother Jay. He just the movies that they play. The sip in the middle, Jay is gonna be a little more critical, analytical when he communicates. And lastly we got Drew, the finally family member of this group. He decides if the movie's worth it. Right kind of guy, that's for certain. Three chatty brothers with a family base. Need an excuse to talk away. Dichotomy of personalities. All you really need to do is press play. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies till they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open to that case. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you two, Not in a Creepy Way.
Welcome, this is Eric.
This is brother Jay.
This is Drew.
And tonight we're going to talk about the 2015 film Mission Impossible Rogue Nation, directed by Christopher McQuarrie.
Yeah, we are.
So, brother Jay, have you seen this movie before?
No.
Excellent. What did you think?
It was okay. I was a little pissed off by the fact that you couldn't just call it Mission Impossible 5. Like, stop fucking coming up with stupid names. Just continue with the numbering. It's just stupid. It pisses me off right out of the gate.
I love it. It sounds so cool. Like a video game. Mission Impossible, mm-hmm. Rogue Nation. I'm not sure it really made sense with the movie, but...
It didn't, because they weren't a nation.
It doesn't matter. It's the kind of title I hear. I'm going to see it.
So I have a question going into this early. Spoilers, since there's another movie. Have either of you seen the next movie? Because I have not.
Yes.
Yes.
So I have a prediction. Having not seen the movie, I don't know anything about it. I don't even know what the fucking next movie's called, but I'm guessing it's Mission Impossible 6 with some other stupid name.
Yes.
Like Doom or Failure or Quantum of Bullshit or something.
It's actually Mission 6 Possible.
Oh my God. Yes. Please. Anyway.
That's not true.
So I'm guessing that the man in the box gets loose in the next one. That's my prediction.
To be honest, I don't even remember.
Mm-hmm. The fact that you've seen it and can't remember the plot is a little telling, but...
Well, partly we'll it's because we'll this digress. Is like the fifth spy action-adventure series we've done, and they all start to meld together after a while.
Are you saying Tom Cruise blends into the gray folds of your brain?
Oh, yeah. Always has been.
Well, wow.
Especially this movie. This was probably like the most born... like Mission Impossible movie we've gotten.
Yes. Way more Bourne-like than James Bond-like.
Mm-hmm.
Although, you know, their James Bond movies are so... They're so many and varied because this movie opens a little bit like that Pierce Brosnan movie. Or one of the Pierce Brosnan movies where it opens up in Russia with the helicopters. This is in Belarus with the plane. Anyway.
Hmm.
Yeah. So, mm-hmm. So Drew, you had seen this before?
I had.
And what did you think then, and what do you think now?
I enjoyed it quite a bit the first time I watched it. I enjoyed it quite a bit when I finished it up today. It's got a lot of things that I like about it. It's got a great bad guy with a really great bad guy voice. Loved his voice. And it has Tom Cruise doing... increasingly unhinged stunts, which is fun. And it had a badass lady character, which is awesome.
Yeah.
With one of the greatest movie character names I can remember for a spy.
Yes.
Ilsa Faust. Yes. Give me the Ilsa Faust movie.
Rebecca Ferguson was much better than Paula Poundstone from the last movie. What was her name in the last movie? Paula Jones?
Paula Patton.
Paula Patton, there
Paula
you go.
Paula Patton.
One of the...
Yes. Yeah. Yes, she was a significant upgrade.
Oh, man.
But I have a lot of thoughts about that character later.
And you, and Alec Baldwin?
I think this is one of those movies that I hadn't remembered. I mean, I remembered some of the details, but I didn't remember all the details until the movie kind of started. But I think this is probably going to be relatively forgettable, but this is also super fun to watch. I thought, actually, I enjoyed all of the characters. I enjoyed Jeremy Renner, which is not always a thing for me.
It was you're right when you say it was a very Bondy movie.
Yeah, kind of, but in a good way. Well, you know, after two incredibly sweet movies in a row, well, one sweet and one just nostalgic and fun, this is now back to our regularly scheduled just fast food entertainment movies.
Have no fear, the snark is back.
Yes, absolutely. Shall we dive in?
I think we should.
It's 2015, and I've got questions, but we will get there. Impossible Missions Force Agent William Brandt, Jeremy Renner, is directing two members of his team, Benji Dunn, Simon Pegg, and Luther Stickle, Ving Rhames, in an attempt to retrieve a package from a cargo plane that's about to take off in Minsk, Belarus. Luther is connecting Benji to the plane's electronics by hacking a Russian satellite, blah, blah, blah. Brandt doesn't like the fact that they're taking unorthodox measures, even though that's the whole point of the Impossible Mission Force, because they're being investigated for all the bullshit that happened in the last movie, which actually I did really appreciate that, where they showed the Transamerica building hit by a nuclear missile.
You said it right.
I had to pause first. Yeah. And then we get this incredible, impossible thing where Tom Cruise grabs on the side of this Airbus.
Mm-hmm.
And the stunt looks real good because he's really hanging from the side of the plane.
Mm-hmm. It looked great. It was funny. Simon Pegg has some very prominent hair plugs.
Well, I think Tom Cruise probably has some...
wig?
Yeah, some work happening.
You think?
Yes, but I will venture to say his is of a higher quality.
Oh, yeah. No, he gets the individual hairs from virgins, like, implanted.
I was going to say he gets it from Xenu Beeblebop or whoever the hell he is.
Yeah.
He's injecting himself with Will Smith's stem cells.
Exactly. There's probably a joke, but I'm not going to make it because it would be rude. So, again, we're going to yada yada the action scenes. That's what I do. It's real good. Like I said, it's a fun action scene, and turns out it's toxic nerve gas. Blah blah blah.
There's some funny stuff too. That's the wrong door was at least chuckle worthy.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, and
it's all about his delivery. Oh, too. Yeah,
and it's a good cold open. It really is. It gets you into the story. I still resented being shown scenes from the movie I was about to watch during the title sequence, but at least it didn't give away anything. I do like the rendition of the Mission Impossible theme that they used this time.
Mm-hmm.
Very fun. Less Moby and more a little more modern.
Less Moby.
Yeah.
He just wants his CDs back, Moby. Just give him his CDs.
That is a great podcast. You know what we're talking about, Jason?
No.
Okay, you need to watch the Heavyweight, or you need to download a podcast called Heavyweight. I think that's what it's called. Mm-hmm. There is an episode about a guy, I forget his name, like Gavin or Garrett or something, who bought these a really obscure like American folk song CDs and loaned them to Moby, and then Moby made all of those songs from I think the Play album, like Run On and Honey and
he sampled that music,
yes,
heavily in his first popular album.
But the story I think is fascinating. So Heavyweight. And I think it's like episode 5 or 6 or 7 or something like that. But anyway,
I'm a little deep in impeachment hearings right now. So,
It's funny.
Between that and the new book that I started listening to,
did you start listening to a very unstable genius?
No. Okay. I am halfway through everything Trump touches dies.
Oh. A little on the nose, but yeah.
Written by Rick Wilson, a Republican strategist.
Yeah, well. Anyway, so, sorry. Back to the fantasy so we can feel good. Nerve gas. So, Ethan is kind of on this mission of his own. He's trying to track down the syndicate, which, yes, should be called the MacGuffin Agency. Because it's a ridiculous name. Whatever.
I think they used the syndicate because they didn't want to rightly use something like anonymous.
No, I disagree. All of the names in this movie are genius. The syndicate, Solomon Kane, Ilsa Faust. It's amazing. Whoever came up with the names deserves a bonus.
So after the cold open and the credits, then Tom Cruise goes into a record store in London.
An IMF front.
Yes. And it's very fun. And apparently in the one of the first episodes of the Mission Impossible TV show is sort of a similar thing where
has a
long playing record instead of a cassette.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's kind of fun. And he gets captured.
I'm so sad that I know that.
A weirdo guy.
He resembled to me a little bit like the Crowley character from Good Omens.
Yeah, he's got a weird thing going on. Who's this actor?
Yeah. I don't know. Did either of you watch Good Omens?
Solomon Lane is Sean Harris. I did not. I it's still on my list. I love the book, but...
It's amazing. You need to watch it. It is really, truly amazing.
I could not get past the first episode.
Oh. What? Just not your thing?
Nah. It was too much. I feel very similarly about the book.
The book is a lot, but I love the book. I love the footnotes. That's just the best part of it.
I think you will cackle.
Okay.
So. It's beautiful. It looks fantastic.
Okay.
Yeah.
I will add it to my list. So, blah, 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 record store, you get to hear this is your next mission, Ethan, but turns out it's not from the IMF, it's from the syndicate saying, we got you.
Yeah, high production value for this trap.
Yeah.
It's been a lot of time to make it as dramatic as possible.
Yeah, it's pretty great. I hate to nitpick, but I'm gonna. So,
oh God, you know, this is where you're going to nitpick? Well,
during the cold
open. The side of the fucking plane you're not going to nitpick, but this is what you're going to nitpick.
Well, hold on. So
180 miles an hour takeoff speed, and he could hold on with handholds on the side of a plane and not be inhaling jet exhaust. But this is what you're going to nitpick. Okay, actually, go ahead.
He hurt his eyes, even though he had special contacts made. Because he could have really hurt his eyes. Anyway.
Go figure.
That's not it. The thing is, so he gets the nerve gas, right, out of the plane. What happens after that? What is the rest of that plan? Because the nerve gas just falls in a field in Belarus, right?
Kablooey. Right
next to the airport. Well, no, yeah. I mean, even if it lands safely, which I assume it would land safely because it's packaged correctly. And there's, you know, parachutes and stuff. But how, what?
They put it on a train.
Exactly, they put it on a train. Yeah, that takes it to Morocco.
No. Train to
London,
to Dubai.
Oh, to Dubai. Yes. Yeah.
I was struggling for that one. Boy, my synapses aren't firing tonight.
Well, it's been a long month for you. So. So then, Tom Cruise. Well, sorry, Tom Cruise wakes up in a torture chamber where we get to meet. Ethan. Sorry.
Ethan. Every time you see Tom Cruise, I just start that Jonathan Colton, Tom Cruise crazy song in my head.
So Ethan wakes up strapped to a, or handcuffed around a pole, which by the way, his little trick, how to get off the pole. That was the whole purpose of the scene, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
No kidding.
Because it's really fucking impressive.
Mm-hmm.
And everything else is just sort of ridiculous.
Apparently, Tom Cruise has a foot fetish.
They had to come up with that when they could not figure out a way to shoehorn in like a salmon ladder.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And then we meet Ilsa Faust, Rebecca Ferguson, who is as deadly as she is alluring. And I appreciated the fight scenes, the hand-to-hand combat scenes. Just enough of that jumping on the neck and twisting around to make it look John Wick-y without having it look absurd and cartoonish.
No horses kicking people in the head?
No, not in this movie. Although it wouldn't be... I guess it would be out of place in this movie, but...
By the way, John Wick 3 is currently on HBO Now, if either of you want to revisit it.
Masterpiece. A la cuisine! So, So, this is where Tom Cruise is, he's going to be tortured by Yannick Vinter, actually also a pretty good name, who's called the Bone Doctor, and has your typical, like, briefcase of torture devices.
It means something very different in my world.
Yeah, well.
See, the names are brilliant.
Well, it is.
Bone Doctor, yeah, come on.
I mean, it is right out of, like The Shadow, you know, radio serial. A little over the top.
Also the Alec Baldwin movie.
Yes, you know what? We should watch The Shadow and The Phantom.
Oh, that sounds rough. Yeah. That sounds like a rough couple nights.
Did we review Team America?
No, not yet.
Alec Baldwin?
Meanwhile, by the way, so Ilsa helps Tom escape from the syndicate guy and also Yannick Vinter.
But she does not break her cover.
No. So she helps him escape, but she does not escape. She claims that he outwitted her, smarted her, outfought her, whatever. So she's still back in the syndicate, and Tom Cruise is out of danger for the moment. But we go back to Washington, D.C., where CIA Director Alan Hunley, played by Alec Baldwin, is before a Senate Oversight Committee. And he's sitting next to Jeremy Renner, who is apparently, like, what, head of IMF now? Something like that?
Well, because they killed everybody else in the last movie.
That's true, yeah.
He's at least the operations chief, if not, like, the administrative head.
Yeah. Alec Baldwin wants to shut down IMF and just consolidate it into the CIA. And... he also wants Hunt back because Hunt is all off on his own in a rogue mission. So, rogue. This is the first incidence of rogue they're talking about. So, Ethan's gone rogue. But Ethan goes rogue in every movie. It's pretty great.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing as exciting as a rogue agent.
And they actually do disband the IMF.
Yes.
Which Ethan finds out when he calls into Brandt.
Yes. After he makes his escape, he calls into Brandt, and that's when they discover that, yeah, he's on his own.
And no one believes that the syndicate actually exists.
It's a figment of Ethan's imagination, his paranoia.
Yeah, and I think Alec Baldwin describes it as he is both the arsonist and the firefighter.
Which I think is actually clever. Yeah. By the way, that happens.
Giant spoiler for Backdraft.
Also, they are pretty sure that Hunt, who is still, you know, on his own operating, evidently, is getting a bunch of information from Benji, but they can't prove it. And so once a week, Benji has to go take a polygraph.
And they never explain how he's beating the polygraph.
No.
But he is.
Yeah, he is, yes.
And Alec Baldwin knows he is. It's like a fun charade they have.
Yeah.
I just assumed it had something to do with the gum he was and wasn't chewing.
Yeah, who knows? It's weird. Ethan then arranges for Benji, who is sort of disgruntled at his job. He's playing Halo 5 or whatever, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So Benji is bored at his job, but he gets he thinks he has won free opera tickets.
Except he was playing Halo 5 on a PC, so...
Maybe he has the Xbox... emulation. I don't know how these things work. Benji goes to Morocco. Oh, sorry, no. Benji goes to Vienna to see an opera. And then we get the opera scene. Now, granted, we've seen scenes like this in other movies and other series.
A Bond movie.
Yeah. But it's well done. It's fun. And we have a couple of little red herrings, because we still don't know if Ilse Faust is... well, we don't even know her name is Ilse Faust yet, I don't think. But we find out that she's still a bad guy, but maybe trying to be a good guy or something, because she's in deep, deep, deep cover.
It is very confusing. She's there. There's some other bad guy there. There's a phony cop there, and they're all trying to do stuff, and they don't see the one person Ethan is actually looking for.
Who is also there.
Yeah. And everybody seems to want to kill the Chancellor of Austria or something.
Yes.
But maybe the other people are there to shoot Ilsa too?
Yes.
It's unclear. Initially, it's unclear.
Yeah. So, after some fairly good stuff, I mean, a little bit of goofy stuff with Benji and the backstage controls.
And another joke about Tom Cruise being short.
Yes. But it's a fun joke. It's the Jaws scene from the Bond movies, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
There's some... Benji has some good one-liners.
Oh, yeah.
Join IMF, come see the world in a closet.
Mm-hmm. So, that's all super fun. And we get the Chancellor of Austria. So, Tom Cruise wounds the Chancellor so he can't be assassinated. But, unfortunately, that does not prevent him from being assassinated because they blow him up with a car bomb outside.
At this point in the movie, I wrote down on my notepad, this is overkill.
Yeah, well, there's something afoot. There's some sort of larger picture. So then Brandt, again, Hawkeye, recruits Luther to help find Ethan and prevent Hunley's team from killing him. Did I mention I really liked Jeremy Renner in this movie? He was way more personable than he was in the last movie. And in maybe every other movie I've ever seen him in. Less of a flat affect.
They never gave him a scene where he had to try and really emote.
Yeah, true.
There was this couple I was in charge of protecting.
Brandt and Luther are able to track Ethan and Benji and Faust to Morocco, where they're trying to infiltrate a secure server underneath a power station. This is very James Bondy.
Yeah, evil genius.
And weird, very convenient and yet very weird set pieces. Like Tom Cruise has to hold his breath and jump down a big old tube thing into a chamber, some sort of underwater server or something.
I don't care. I love everything having to do with Rebecca Ferguson.
She's great. She is really fun in this movie.
She's great. Even the scene in the car when they're escaping the opera, just like the expression on her face when they're trying to figure out what's going on with her. She's great. Loved it.
Well, also, by the way, I love Simon Pegg's expressions in this movie in Cars. Like, he really does get a lot of the fun car scenes.
I think the implication was that the giant supercomputer was water cooled.
Yeah, that's a little too on the nose.
Just saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't the supercomputer. It was the storage for the supercomputer.
Again, you're right. It doesn't actually matter. So, apparently Tom Cruise, at least the trivia says Tom Cruise was able to hold his breath for 6 minutes during this.
Oh, please. Scene.
Yeah, I don't know. Seems like a long time, but he's had a lot of time to practice, and he's many levels higher in the institution than we are.
Mm-hmm.
He has gone clear.
Okay.
So what they want is to get a ledger of all the names from the syndicate agents. Again, this is, what is it, the knock list, right? It's
a knock list.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. It's the bad guy's knock list. Yeah, it's, you know, again, it's fine. We have... you know, Tom Cruise in the underwater thing, and he nearly dies, but Ilsa saves him. And shocks him back to life because she's got an AED, which is very convenient. But then she betrays him by taking the data or whatever that Simon Pegg had collected while Tom Cruise was blah, blah, blah. So now they're hunting for Ilsa because Ilsa has this MacGuffin thing, the red box.
Yeah, there's a lot of levity with Tom Cruise being brought back from the dead, too.
Yes.
Because he's pretty out of it.
And then he has to jump in a car and drive.
Yeah, the jumping over the hood of the car thing was great.
Yeah, it was fun. And, you know, the car scenes, the motorcycle scenes, they all work in this movie. And there is nothing technically wrong with this movie at all.
No.
It looks great. It's fun. Feels great.
It's fun. It's funny.
Yeah. So, blah, blah, blah. Ilsa goes to London, tries to pass the drive back to her handler, the MI6 director, played by Simon McBurney.
And where do we know him from?
Where do we know him from? I guess I will look. Sorry, I don't have the extensive notes I sometimes have.
Be careful, you don't want to crash your system again.
Dear God. Hey, I was... Slight tangent. During our recording last week, my computer actually crashed with a blue screen of death. You get to hear Jason and Drew talking about that after I crashed last week. And so I end up with a file, a WAV file, that is like 700 and something megs big and yet contains no sound. It won't play in any way I can try it. But online, I figured out how to. There's a little program you can download for, because I have Total Recorder. There's some sort of Total Recorder temporary recovery file thing that allows you to take the temporary file that is 700 and something megs long and basically put a new like header or some sort of file directory or something. So it turns it into a WAV file again. And it was perfect.
So he played Frank Hawking in Theory of Everything. He was in Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy. He was in one of the Harry Potter movies.
Are we going to talk about the Harry Potter movies at some point?
Yeah, I'd be up for it.
He was in The Manchurian Candidate in 2004.
Excellent.
He has about 55 actor credits. He was in The Last King of Scotland and The Conjuring 2.
He's one of those guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He played Rupert Murdoch in The Loudest Voice.
Oh.
I've not seen that.
I'm not even familiar with that movie.
It's like a mini series. I think it was on Showtime about Roger Ailes.
Oh, okay.
Russell Crowe maybe played Roger Ailes?
Wow.
Yes, Russell Crowe played Roger Ailes. And Seth MacFarlane was in it. Naomi Watts. Wow, I need to watch this.
Yeah. Was Seth MacFarlane Bill O'Reilly?
No.
That would be great.
Is Bill O'Reilly a kid?
For some reason, I was thinking of Seth Green, which would have even been better.
Oh, God. was Bill O'Reilly even in the movie?
I don't know. It was, a six-episode show?
Glenn Beck is played by Josh McDermott. Dick Cheney. Carl Rove. Alan Greenberg plays Carl Rove. It surprises me that there's no Bill O'Reilly, considering, you know, he's like molesting people with loofahs. So
he wasn't molesting that person. He was just having an affair.
He's not...
Tomato, tomato.
What's it? Wait. Didn't he? Trying to think.
There's too many. You can't pick.
No, I'm just. Didn't he or someone else around this time get confused between a loofah and a falafel?
Yes, that was him.
Oh, it was him. Okay, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because you definitely do. You know, a loofah is just.
It's a little scratchy to swallow.
Yeah, a loofah is kinky. A falafel is perverted.
I think that's all perspective.
So then we have to go and open this red box. And what a red... And actually, sorry. So Benji and me...
Every time they said red box, by the way...
You want to go rent a movie, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Or actually, I think there's also a rent-a-dumpster company called Redbox as well, with two X's. Either way, it's ridiculous. So Redbox, it's a data safe program by British intelligence, and you can only be unlocked by the Prime Minister.
Did you already say that Ilsa's handler makes her go back undercover?
Oh, yeah. Sorry, we got interrupted at that point. No. So Ilsa tries to hand this off and go back to MI6. He wants to, them to bring her in. But he's like, no, you have to see this thing through. Setting him up as a big bad guy.
Yes, he is instantly hateable.
Yes. And maybe...
anybody who's not nice to Ilsa is hateable.
I think Drew's got an Ilsa situation.
I think there's a little crush going on.
They're worse things, for sure. So, now we have to go and kidnap the Prime Minister of England. And by the way, again, maybe because this is not my country's government, and I don't really have a lot of, like, a good feeling for the gravity of Prime Ministers generally, but can you imagine they have to go and kidnap Boris Johnson? Like,
I actually could not remember if this was a real plot point in a Nicolas Cage National Treasure movie or if it was a plot point in a SNL parody of a National Treasure movie that they were going to go kidnap the president. I still don't know the answer, but that's the first thing I thought of.
Rebecca Ferguson?
Yes.
Is playing Lady Jessica in the new Dune.
Oh. Drew has so many mixed feelings right now.
I'm glad this is an audio-only format.
She was in Us.
She was in Us?
I don't remember.
The 2013 Us.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
Sorry, just to get back quickly. Because, again, yada yada and a whole bunch of stuff.
Well, it's because it's big, splody, goofy explosion.
Pretty much, yeah. So they have to go, and there's a whole series. And there's more masks, which it's funny because
they brought the masks back.
At first, I didn't. You know, I hated the masks from the very first movie, but now I thought the masks were fun. I'm glad they brought them back. They brought back the masks, but there is no scene where somebody falls and then stops short on a wire or a magnet or whatever.
I love that they can do like a real life, just a completely perfect mask and can completely change the voice, but they still have to get the Prime Minister to say the code phrase.
Well, exactly. Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
I mean, I guess they didn't know what the actual phrase needed to be, but I assume they could have doctored their own voices to match the voice print.
I think you're probably right. So they have to get all these biometrics to open this red box. And they open the red box to find out that it's all these bank accounts, which is where the syndicate has all its money hidden. Oh, and they also find out during this that actually the syndicate was an idea cooked up by the MI6 that was supposed to be just a trial balloon that was thrown out. But because it was so sinister, the Prime Minister is like, oh, fuck no.
Oh, not just an idea of MI6, an idea of Attlee.
Yes.
So we get confirmation that he's a giant dick.
Yes.
And not just to Ilsa, to the whole world.
Yes, to the whole world.
Sean Harris, by the way, is the actor who plays Solomon Lane.
Oh, I'm sorry. I should have said that.
Anyway, blah, blah, blah. For some reason, Ethan believes that Lane is infallible, which is a weird thing to take. I mean, he sees that all this has been set up, but he continues to insist that everything is for a reason. There is a master plan because this guy is a mastermind. But he can outsmart him because he's Ethan fucking Hunt. He doesn't swear that much, I don't think. So, masks, dark guns. Then Tom Cruise decides, well, they have to go and pick up Benji, but because Benji gets kidnapped by Lane, who's like, that's, by the way, yeah, that's why I missed. The reason why they have to get the Prime Minister is because they need to unlock the red box. They need to unlock the red box because they kidnap Benji. Lane kidnaps Benji. So Tom Cruise decides he is going to solve this problem because we don't want to give Lane the all the data that allow him to completely, I guess his goal is world domination by destruction and chaos and whatever. So this will fund his terrorist enterprise for many, many years. But Tom Cruise decides he will solve the problem by memorizing all these bank accounts. What is that?
It's a very James Bond thing to do.
It's also never, has this ability to memorize vast amounts of data ever been a thing?
No.
Nope.
So it's just invented for this thing. Oh, he has this trick also.
Some kind of photographic memory.
Yeah.
Yeah, he can do anything.
Yes. Well, he's Ethan Hunt. So, So Tom Cruise memorizes the whole thing, and so that's how he ends up double crossing Lane or getting the upper hand on Lane because Lane can't kill him. And shootout, Benji's okay, blah blah blah, and then they capture Lane. They don't kill Lane. They capture him. Using a plexiglass box with the knockout gas, just like it's a bookend. It's a callback from the record store. So it's very exciting.
You yada yada'd a fantastic ending set piece.
The
all of the
motorcycle chase.
No, the cafe shootout and the run through the streets.
Yes,
and all the fighting and all the Ilsa time we got. It was great. The little choreography they had at the cafe was very reminiscent of the brief scenes in Mission Impossible 3 with Kerry Russell.
Mm-hmm. Right. Oh, wow. You want to see the Kerry Russell Ilsa Faust movie.
Yeah, that would be badass. Yes, absolutely. But they had great chemistry in this movie as far as the action scenes went. He looked great. She looked great.
She goes her own way at the end. They don't have to play a Fleetwood Mac song. Mm-hmm. And then we go back to the Oversight Committee, and they reinstate IMF. And now Alec Baldwin is the secretary. Dun, 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 dun. And the next movie is called Mission Impossible Fallout, which maybe they're going to deal with the fallout from the havoc created in this movie. We will find out.
Well, you saw the stinger at the end of the credits, right?
You are just mocking me now. I think the Hulk punches Thor or something, right?
Something like that.
Yeah. So, any more? Do you have any notes, Jason?
Nope. That was all of them.
I think Drew's right. Ilsa Faust was great. I liked everybody in this movie. I had a good time. I've already forgotten some of the plot points, and I'll probably forget them all by the next couple of weeks where we'll see the last episode in this series.
We barely talked about Ving Rhames, but he is playing yet another different incarnation of Luther.
Yeah. He got more time, obviously, than Ghost Protocol, because he was just a cameo in that, but... Mm-hmm. I love the fact that he was one of the people that are going to try to box Ilsa in. And we knew that wasn't going to work. He's not going to outrun Ilsa. So that was kind of funny. And there was funny, there's a, what, Range Rover, Land Rover, whatever. A little bit of humor with Luther and Brandt.
Yeah, for as dark as like the Solomon Lane character was, there was a lot of humor in this movie.
Yeah. And everybody got some yucks. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So, Brother Jay, your verdict?
I'll give this a B. It was decent. The plot didn't piss me off. It kept my interest. I had some problems with it, but for the most part, it was fine. It was perfectly fine, like, splody movie where there was things didn't make sense, but it was fine. You know, it was Bondy. I've seen enough Bond movies that it didn't offend me.
Drew, was it worth it?
Yes, absolutely. This is probably my favorite Mission Impossible movie to date of the ones we've seen. I had such a fun time with this movie that it made Ghost Protocol worse. Because everything in this movie was essentially just an upgrade of Ghost Protocol. Like you mentioned, we got Rebecca Ferguson instead of Paula Patton. They didn't ask Jeremy Renner to do things that Jeremy Renner is not suitable to do. We got more time with Luther. We got more comic relief from Simon Pegg. We had a better villain. They threw in Alec Baldwin. Yeah, everything was just better in this movie. The stunts were better. The action was better. It moved along. It was good. I had such a fun time. And it does make me want to go downgrade Ghost Protocol because of it.
Yeah, I think so. By the way, we know Rebecca Ferguson from The Girl on the Train, which is actually a pretty good movie with Emily Blunt.
Was she the new wife?
She was Anna, who I believe, well, I don't know, you know, to be honest, I don't know whether she was the new wife or not. That would make sense, though. Yeah, they had a baby, right? So, yeah. It's got to be the new wife.
She was very blonde in that movie, if I remember correctly. No,
a different girl, different character, different actress. Okay. Yeah. But I could be wrong. She could be blonde in that movie as well, but she's not the big blonde in that movie. Anyway, yeah, I'd recommend that movie. It was better than it had to be. It was good. And you know,
better than it had to be.
Well, you know, I mean, it was an Emily Blunt movie, and it was kind of, you know, it's a very popular book, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, no, she was the mom of the kid. She was very blonde.
Okay, all right. Anyway, okay, so.
Have either of you looked, have you done any research on the new Dune?
I have not.
Holy crap. So
it's got a ton of people in it.
Javier Bardem, Jason Momoa, Stellan Skarsgård, Josh Brolin. It's like, geez, like that's a pretty good start.
Well, and Rebecca Ferguson.
Yeah.
The director.
Denis Villeneuve.
Yeah.
Or Denis Villeneuve.
Mm-hmm.
Or whatever. I can't say his name.
And we know him from Sicario, Arrival, and Blade Runner 2049.
Yeah, he's on quite a run.
Have you guys seen Blade Runner 2049?
I own it. We haven't watched it yet.
I've seen it.
Is it good? Is it?
I liked it a lot.
When was the last time you watched Blade Runner itself?
Yeah, I was going to ask that question too. Is Blade Runner even worth watching?
Yes.
I've seen it in the past couple of years. I watched it so I could watch Blade Runner 2049.
Yeah, boyfriend Jesse and I watched Blade Runner last year, and he thought it was great.
Okay.
It's good. It's, Rucker Hauer, man. It's really sad.
Yeah.
Edward James Olmos, right?
Yes.
Anyway, okay, housekeeping. I guess we haven't really talked about my car on the podcast, have we? But I spent another $900 on car repairs.
Oof.
But it's okay. What happened was because of all this sub-zero Fahrenheit weather, you know, shit breaks. And every indication is that the high-pressure hose that goes into my power steering pump exploded, which means that all the power steering fluid leaked out and the bearing seized in the pump itself. So what I heard was like, I thought it was like a screaming cat noise.
Was just your power like steering pump?
No, it was the serpentine belt shredding itself.
Oh.
So I limped it into the shop, and thank goodness our parents were on vacation, because I could call up and say, hey, or I could text and say, hey, can I borrow mom's car? So that we didn't have to have one car for the length of time it was in the shop. Because as you can imagine, the automotive shop was full of vehicles that were towed in and stuff. Because again, this cold has really wreaked some havoc on mechanical.
Notwithstanding that Mother's car just died shortly before they left.
No, turns out that's that ignition thing. That's just a new feature of their car. If as long as you put the key in correctly, it's fine.
That's a new feature of their old car.
It's just weird. Yeah, it's just one of those things that happens to cars eventually. There's a trick. But let me tell you, it was super reliable for me for the 4 days I had it or whatever. It was great. And I didn't wreck it, which is always a plus.
You know they're going to sell it, so.
Yeah, I've learned that lesson. Although it's funny, you know, you think, okay, I've got a 2002 car, right? So that's like 18 years old. I don't at this point, I'm not too, can't really afford to buy a new car that I have to make payments on. And I don't want to buy another 20-year-old car. So something goes wrong with this one. It's like, so I'll be babying this car for a while. But hey, everything's gotten, because of last year, I got a whole new, brake and front end alignment and total brake job. And then now I got a new power steering pump and a serpentine belt and the high pressure hoses, which, by the way, of all those things, the serpentine belt, the power steering pump, and the high pressure hose, it was the high pressure hose that was the most expensive part.
Well, it's because it's the most vital thing.
Yeah, well, weird. So anyway, so that's my housekeeping. Knock on wood, things are fine. The temperature, though, they promised us that it was going to get warmer. It has not. It got warmer for a couple days, but it is back to being cold. And I know we live in Alaska, so I shouldn't bitch about the cold, but, you know, I don't need it to be 50 degrees, but, you know, 25 degrees Fahrenheit. 30 degrees Fahrenheit.
Oh, that'd be so nice.
Wouldn't it? 25 would be wonderful. I'd wear shorts again.
It peaked up to 20 during the warm spell we had. And it was like no coat weather.
It's great.
It's balmy.
Yeah.
It really, I mean, that was a 35 degree difference.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, the parents are in Hawaii and they have like almost, you know, like a 90 degree difference.
Yes, they are going to be a 100 degree difference by the time yes. they get home, because it is getting cold this weekend.
Yeah, it's going to be another.
Well, they get home Saturday and then they leave again Thursday.
Thursday, exactly, yeah.
And they're going to come to rain and cold, so.
Well,
but at least it's in the 50s, so.
I had a fun experience with the cold that affected Eric as well.
Do tell.
We were up in Willow this weekend for the long Martin Luther King weekend. So my wife was out of town for last week, and she came back like late Friday night after we recorded, actually. And then we turned around Saturday morning and headed right out to Willow. So I had everything packed up as much as I could, and we left pretty early. And we had a lovely weekend out in Willow. It was great. It was super cold, but there's more snow out there, so it's more fun. And, you know, we're not at home, so it's there's less guilt about just kind of lazing around the house since it's a recreation property. And we both took she might have gotten Monday off. Either way, we both took Monday off because there was no school. So we were spending the extra day out there. We thought until, also we carpooled. So we just took my truck out there because we didn't have a lot to take up. So Sunday night, my wife was just checking in the house in town here. And she noticed when she was looking on the cameras that there was a funny noise going on. So I looked at it and I, you know, turned the volume up. We have Nest cams. So we could hear something, but it wasn't super easy to tell what it was. It just sounded like a constant, like fan. And then I looked at our thermostat, and I saw a familiar set of circumstances where the heat was on, but the actual temperature was way below what the heat was. So the heat was on, like, 62. I was supposed to get up to heat the house 62, and... Come on.
So does the Nest thing tell you what the temperature is, or does the
The Nest thermostat, you can see the thermostat. You can see the temperature in your house, and you can see the set point. You can actually see the same thing on your phone or from the internet for that point as what's actually on your wall in your house.
Oh, good to know. Okay, that makes sense.
Including you could, in theory, if your furnace was working, you could actually turn the heat up or down from your phone.
Yes, which is what my wife was, I think, attempting to do when she... As part of her checking on the house, is make sure
that you didn't turn the heat up.
Because it has like a learning feature. So based on your past activities, it will like use some sort of algorithm to predict what the temperature should be and when you should change it. So when we're out in Willow for an extended period of time, we might look at it and see like, oh, it's heating the house up to 68 because it thinks this is about the time of day when we want the house warmer. So she like keeps turning it down.
It also has away mode. So if it thinks that you're away, it drops down temperatures if you set up the away mode. Plus if you're in a zone like Portland where there's super peak days for either super hot or super cold, if you let it adjust your thermostat to a little more gentle of the temperature extremes. If I let the power company basically say on high hot days, I don't air condition the house as much, I get like $25 a month back.
That's nice. Yeah.
So eventually the thermostat pays for itself.
Yeah. So let me ask you this, Jason, what do you think is the bottom boundary of what the Nest thermostat can detect?
I think it's like 54.
It might detect lower than 50. It does not display any lower than 50. So when we looked at it, our heat was on because the thermostat was orange, means it's calling for heat. The temperature was set at 62, but the actual temperature was 50. This was like an oh fuck moment. It was really cold that night. And this meant that it seemed very familiar because this happened a few weeks ago at the first of the year when my wife was actually home.
Your igniter problem.
Yeah, our igniter broke, which meant the furnace was operating. It was calling for heat, but there was no flame. So it was just blowing cold air throughout the house. And it looked exactly like that. But because the thermostat display doesn't go below 50, I had no idea what the actual temperature in my house was. So at about 10 o'clock at night, I hit the road to come back to see what was going on. So I called Eric to see what he was up to and asked Eric to go check out my house and see how cold it was and make sure that my pipes weren't frozen, and if they weren't, to turn on some hot water. Because if we can keep the pipes from freezing, the house can get pretty darn chilly without, a whole lot of damage. Again, this was Sunday night, late at night, before a holiday Monday. So while I was driving home and enlisting Eric to go check out my house, my wife was trying to call after hours service providers to come look at our furnace, of which she got no one, including the companies that advertise 24/7, 365. We don't have anybody on call tonight. So you're big fat liars.
Oh, that's not a good answer.
No.
The better answer would be, we're all booked up for tonight.
Yes. Yeah, so Eric graciously agreed to stop whatever he was doing, I assume getting ready to go to sleep, and go check out my chilly house and turn on some water. And so thank you very much for doing that. Oh, I really appreciate it.
It was almost nothing, but I'm happy to help.
Yeah. The best part of this was, once I got home and checking. I monkeyed around with the furnace trying to see if it was anything I could fix, and turned out it was not. I spent a pretty chilly evening in my house. So the first thing in the morning I could try and get a furnace guy out to look at it.
And by the way, when I got there, it was cold, but I couldn't see my breath or anything. So that was a happy thing. And there's plenty of hot water. Your hot water heater works just great. So
yeah,
that's just helpful.
It was great. Yeah. And, I cranked up my garage heater and I asked you to leave my door open to the garage. So we got some heat into the house, and I fired up my fireplace, and that has a little bit of a fan on it. So I think I got the temperature in my living room up to like 56 that evening, because I didn't want to sleep with the fireplace on. But I did sleep downstairs because upstairs was super cold.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I got a furnace guy out the next morning, and he did a pretty thorough once over of my furnace and determined that the igniter that was put in 2 weeks ago was broken. He didn't need a new one. He had a part with him. So it took him about an hour all told to go over my furnace and install the new igniter. And so by about 11:30 or so the next morning, I had heat. So by like 1 o'clock, my house is up to about 62. So I was feeling pretty good about it at that point. But here's the best part. When I got home and I texted Eric that I got there, and then I called my wife and told her I was there and I was going to try and do some stuff with the furnace and then probably just hit the hay. It wasn't quite cold enough where I thought I would go spend the night at the parents' house since they weren't there. But if it was any colder, I probably would not have spent the night at the house. But I did. But the best part was when I got there and talked to my wife, she said she was very grateful that Eric, that you were able to come out and check out our house for us. But also she was super embarrassed by the state of our household.
Oh.
And while she was telling me this, I was like, oh, it's fine. I mean, it's a little messy, but it's not that bad. But then when I got home and I was looking around, and you know when you live in it, like day to day, you don't really notice it. But when something gives you occasion to like look at it through someone else's eyes, I was like looking around my house. I just started laughing. I was like, oh my God, this really is a disaster zone. And, you know, I'd been a single parent all week. And this is going to sound like a super pretentious excuse, but also our housekeeper who comes every other week is on vacation. So that would have been her weekend that she cleaned up the house. And this is not to say that we don't have her like pick up our shit. We actually just have her do like real cleaning. Like she'll clean the bathrooms and vacuum the floors. But what that does is it makes us pick up our house every couple weeks at least.
Exactly. That was the best thing about having a babysitter on the weekends for Journey.
Yes. Yeah. Just having somebody like come to your house on a regular basis does wonders for keeping it at least presentable. So we didn't have that pressure to clean up, and it had just been me all week. So, you know, I was just in survival mode and so I started looking around. I was like, oh my God, it looks like a Tasmanian devil went through every part of my house, downstairs and upstairs. And the greatest part was like, I was so dismissive of my wife. I was like, oh, it's not that bad. But then I started looking around. I was like, God, when I got home and tried to turn on the fireplace, like I was in such a, you know, get shit done mode, I didn't even think about it. But to turn on the fireplace, I literally had to do like an arm sweep of all the shit that was in front of it. I just swept it onto the floor. So I've been pretty draconian with my children all week. Like every day after school, we're like, we're cleaning up a little bit. So like bit by bit, we started picking up.
Oh,
They think I'm being mean for no reason, but
you'll understand when you're older.
We only have 2 weeks to get everything picked up before our housekeeper comes back.
Exactly. Yeah.
So if we don't do a little bit every night, next Thursday is going to be a nightmare, and it probably still will be anyway. Because I don't know, that's the great part about having kids is everything is very dynamic. Like it's you clean stuff up to get to a point. It doesn't stay that way though. It's no. Just you kind of get there, and then the rock rolls back down the hill, and you start pushing it up again.
Yep.
And so yeah, but we've been cleaning up a little bit every night with a warm house, which is great.
Yes.
So what's
it did make me very thankful that I live in the same town as family, because it was already a very stressful drive back in the darkness and the cold.
Yeah, I can't imagine.
So that was an even better part was so I did all that Monday, work and school was on Tuesday, but by mid-afternoon, my family was still stranded in Willow because we exactly. had carpooled, and I had to come back. So once I got the things taken care of here, I had to go back up to Willow, and then we packed everything up, and then we came back that night. So
and in the wintertime, how long a drive is that?
Well, you know, in the middle of the night, it was only about an hour and 40 minutes, but when there's any sort of traffic in the winter, it's a good solid 2 hours.
Yeah, not my favorite. Yeah.
So what's up with your furnace that it keeps eating igniters?
I don't know. You know, the part that we put in a couple weeks ago was probably an 8 to 10 year old part.
Oh.
It had just been hanging out. So I don't know if that had anything to do with it. I don't know if it's a leading indicator that my furnace is about to die. I don't know.
And do you not have access to the burners of your furnace, or you just don't even get into it at all?
No, I can access the burners.
Oh, because now I'd be checking the igniter, and if it didn't ignite, I'd be lighting that puppy myself.
That's not how this furnace works.
Oh.
It's not like a pilot light situation.
Well, mine doesn't have a pilot light. It has an igniter, too, but I was able to light it, you know, with a lighter. With my crack torch, basically.
Yeah, I think the way this works is this is ceramic igniter that gets super hot. I mean, it actually glows hot, and then that heats up enough to
ignite,
trigger the gas to flow.
Yeah, yeah, I think if the igniter doesn't have the proper electric signals, also, like if it's not electrically sound, not making a circuit, it won't. You've got a safety valve that won't open your gas. That's how our oven is. That's why I have to have somebody come and put an igniter in my oven. Even though I could technically do it myself, it's like you have to be like upside down inside there. So it's like, I'll just get somebody to do it. It's
Well, after seeing it done twice in the past 3 weeks, I was telling Eric before we started recording, I am overconfident enough now that I ordered 2 igniters from Amazon. So if it happens again, I'm ready to give it a go myself.
And how expensive are your igniters?
Well, when I buy them from the guy that comes to put them in, they're $65. Uh-huh. When I buy them from Amazon, they're about $17 a piece.
Yeah. Mine and Amazon is $180.
Holy moly.
Yeah. So stupid high efficiency bullshit.
Oh yeah. My furnace is 20 years old. So yeah. I'm already on borrow time on it.
Mine's 10, so you know, we're halfway there.
Yeah. So yeah, that was my exciting weekend that impacted my brother.
Barely. I mean, I was, like I said, happy to help, did almost nothing, but got to feel like a hero. And actually, on the way home, I got out of there early enough. Then on the way home, I stopped at Walmart and got a cordless Dremel tool so I can polish my macaroni art. So, yeah.
Oh yeah. I am supposed to ask you why you were standing at our stove saying shit, shit, shit.
No, I know why. Because I turned your oven on to like maybe get some heat out of it. Mm-hmm. You have two ovens. Yes. And what I did not do, I mean, one of my favorite tapes to play at in my job to for new people is a tape for this lady with a really hilarious accent that has an oven fire because she forgot she had stuffed like plastic things in there. And then she preheated the oven and it caused a fire. Yeah. So when I started both of your ovens and I opened the top one and so I decided to open the bottom one and like, oh, there's pans in here. I mean, they were fine. They just would have been hot pans, but it was like, so that's why I said chit. Yeah.
Well, welcome to the world of webcams.
No, I was dancing and I think I took a bow or two and it's
excellent. Very nice.
Yeah, I did not review the footage, but my wife I think was watching while that happened.
Oh, so I was on my best behavior.
She was not concerned. She was happy you were there, but she thought it was funny.
Yeah. Well, I'm happy to amuse as well as.
Yeah, it all worked out great for me eventually.
Yeah. So, Brother Jay.
Just getting ready for the onslaught of people that will be here. I think I'm mostly prepared. I've just got to finish some house cleaning stuff. I got Derek's bedroom cleaned out, so it's kind of technically now the guest room. We pulled the terrible drapes off and went and bought some new blinds to put up. So there's actually something covering the windows now. Going through all the paperwork and Derek's weird stuff. I found the title to his truck, so that was good.
Nice.
The bad news is that he never bothered to get it registered when he bought it.
Oh,
God. So the tags have been expired since 2014.
This is a truck he did not drive?
No, this is his work truck. He drove it every single day.
Oh.
Well, that's remember, fun. He just renewed his driver's license that had been expired for a couple of years.
3 years. Right? Yeah, exactly. So,
I have a follow-up housekeeping after that.
Sweet. So, I was trying to explain to one of his sisters that this is absolutely, it made me laugh because I'm like, this is so Derek. Like, he wasn't going to go to the DMV and get the truck registered because he wasn't going to give them any more goddamn money. Like, I could already hear it in my head. Like, I knew exactly because I told him before, I'm like, you should probably get that registered. And then I just forgot about it because I don't care. It's not my parking fine. It's not my ticket if I get pulled over. Except now if I wanted to borrow the pickup to go to the dump, it would be my ticket. So,
hey, in our jurisdiction, if you're vehicle is more than a year out of registration, we'll just tow it.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to go up to DMV on Monday and get a trip permit so I can at least have it for the week to transport garbage with. So that won't be a huge ordeal, but it was just one of those when I just had to laugh. But I don't think it's the, like, I have a bill of sale for it, but it was never submitted to the DMV. So
you have a signed title?
Yes.
So you could put it in your name.
I'm sure that I could, I guess. Anyway, it's just, it made me laugh. It was one of the, and it was in a bunch of paperwork that had nothing to do with his vehicle. I mean, it was just like randomly in a bunch of papers. So, and he had five different copies of his birth certificate, but not in the same place, like spread out, like through like this mishmash.
Of course, because the last three he got because he couldn't find the first two.
So it's been this comedy of errors. It's gonna be crazy. It's already crazy. I'm just chugging along right now. Just trying to get through it all. It's gonna be a busy week ahead. So
yeah, as well, keep on keeping on, brother.
But
the parents will be down, which will hopefully alleviate some stress and probably cause some others.
Yes. I would definitely, yes. So, but, things are going. The parents have been, very helpful and generous. So, I'm really grateful for family right now. It's been very, it's been a very robust support network that I have. So I appreciate all of you very much. I imagine that there will be a lot of it's going to be a rough week no matter what happens, mostly because it's going to be an integration of a lot of very different personalities and a lot of people that haven't traditionally been in the same room together for the last decade, maybe. So it'll be a thing.
Well, maybe. Who knows how it's going to work out? There's no way to tell.
The good news is I can kick them all out of my house if I have to. So.
So nobody's really officially staying with you?
So his young, I think Casey's the youngest. I think she and her wife are going to stay here and they're going to stay in Derek's room, which I guess is, I should start calling it the guest room. But after that, I don't have any room. I mean, there's no more room in the house. I'm not having people stay in my living room. I just can't. I'm too old for that. And I don't want people like climbing around my basement and trying to die coming up the stairs or something. Like, I don't need that kind of, like, I don't need that right now in my life.
Yeah.
So I'm just trying to make it through.
Well, but this too will pass.
Oh no. Jesse and I were talking about it. You know, it's like, we still got to carry on and we will. And I'm now getting to the point where I'm just using his name in vain a lot. So that's about where I'm at right now.
That seems about healthy.
Yeah.
So take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here.
Take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here.
One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you wanna catch an episode. They talk movies, so they go off on a tangent flow and maybe rambling. That's the brother Sanderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away unless you're driving. Keep them open in that case. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way.
Hey. Not in a creepy way. 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 Okay. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. Okay.